House of Run podcast.
What are you into these days? Mostly running, Alan. Running.
Yeah. Look at Bill! Look at Bill!
It's coming on! Bill, coming on!
I'm not thinking about making the team. I'm thinking about gold in Munich.
What can I say? I got beat by a zebra.
Starts now.
Welcome back, everyone, to the House of Run podcast. House of Run at gmail.com is the email address. I am Kevin. He is Jason. Going to recap NCAA indoors on this pod. Going to read a bunch of emails as well. We'll also talk about the big news in the sports world. That is Tyreek Hill smashing the 7-second barrier in the 60. They said it couldn't be done.
It's this redefining what's possible.
Roger Bannister 2.0.
I think that's the only apt comparison, right? I thought his heart would explode, personally.
So. Yeah. The Sir Edmund Hillary of the 60. The Tanzig Norgay of the indoor track.
Man.
One small step for football players. One giant leap for people who tweet too much about it. I don't know. All right. How are you doing, man? What's going on?
I'm doing good. You know, Ted Lasso apparently dropped a little early. I thought the debut was tomorrow, but apparently I was checking Twitter about, I don't know, a half hour ago, and I saw that's like, oh, it's out. And So I haven't watched yet, obviously, because it was a tight turnaround, but I'm excited.
We got some great feedback on our Ted Lasso episode. And by great feedback, I think one person mentioned it to me that they liked it. So I'm going to use that as a representative sample and say we killed it. I watched the first minute. I was hoping you could watch the first minute right now, and then we could do recap the first minute, and then just every week recap the first minute. Now, we're off to a good start. I'll say that. Maybe we'll recap the first episode next week. We'll just be a week behind.
Or maybe we'll do two, right? Yeah, we don't want to do it too early.
Yeah, or maybe we could do two next week, because if we record on a Wednesday or something after it comes out, we'd have more time. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out. We like the show. How do you watch it? Do you watch it on a TV, on a tablet?
Phone. You know, no. I watch it on my TV.
I mean, you laugh. You'll hate me for this. I probably watched most of the first two seasons on my phone.
That's rough.
Sorry.
In your first watch through, because like, hey, if you're watching something, you know, that's fine. But I don't know.
I probably
Nicole
couldn't
Kidman
figure out.
So sad about you not watching the big screens and things like that. So
I probably couldn't figure out at first how to have Apple have it cast, or it didn't work, and I just gave up and was like, I'm gonna watch this show. I'm so used to watching everything just on my phone. I know it's bad.
That's interesting. See, I don't watch any thing longer than, I don't know, you know, like a 3-minute video, and even then I have to be really invested.
Oh wow.
I don't watch TV or movies on my phone. I guess outside of like on a plane or something like that, you know.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I do smaller stuff, like the Star Wars stuff I'll do on my phone, and like when it's a big cinematic thing like Snow Dogs or Snow Dogs 2, then I'll probably put it up on the big screen. Yeah,
man. Do you, man. Whatever works for you.
I know I'm wrong.
Yeah, objectively, it's a bad move. But,
yeah,
you know, you got a busy life. You got a much busier life than I do, so you got to do what you got to do.
I do feel as if sometimes I'm just trying to sneak it. hey, the kids are asleep. I could just, I'm not going to go out and put it on TV and wake people up either. That's probably part of it.
Right.
The other part is just I want to be laying down in my bed most of the time.
Are you a TV in the bedroom person?
We don't anymore. We moved it out.
Okay.
So that might be part of it. But then Katie and I would have to agree. And Katie and I haven't agreed on a show in several years. So
interesting.
That wouldn't. Yeah. It's all going in the opposite direction of me actually watching things. But I think I might for this. I think you've convinced me. I might something like Ted, you know, there's a lot of special effects, a lot of big scores.
I mean, yeah, it's not a hugely, you know, necessarily cinematic type thing, but it's
I think John Williams did the score for this one. So I think I want to have that on
the Mumford and Sons guy, right? Is the one who does it.
Oh, that's right. So it actually really, really is a name guy. All right. Let's get on with the pod. This is a track and field show, and we're gonna talk
By the way, side note, bought an 86-inch TV this last week, and I'm so happy with it.
Wow. How big was your old TV?
That one was 65, which it just pales in comparison. So
I don't even know how large both my TVs are. Probably not that big.
86 is pretty big. It's a massive improvement.
Maybe that's the reason I don't really feel the need to watch it. Maybe my TV is just not that much bigger than my phone, now that I think about it. Right. It's just,
you're like, I'm using a computer monitor from 2003, so well, that could be why.
I think this one in front of me, this, I'm in the guest room right now, it might be 40. I don't know. Mm. It's not very big, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm definitely like a, and it's, you know, it's, not, I don't know, it's not a good thing, but like, I have to have like a large TV. Like, it's just kind of,
mm-hmm,
a necessity for me.
Well, I know how well you handle them, because at my parents' house, you installed it. Like, you mounted it to the wall that one time back in 2016, and it's still standing.
Hasn't broken yet.
Great job.
Yes.
Great, great carpentry from Jason. All right. Let's get into it.
Yeah.
Man, we could play the American Record song a couple times too. This is gonna be a good pod. NCAA indoors over the weekend. Women's side of things, we had collegiate records in the 60 hurdles, 200, 400, 4x4, long jump, triple jump.
Jesus.
And I'm on the women's side, I might be missing something. And then for the men, the heptathlon, Kyle Garland almost broke the world record, broke Eaton's collegiate record. That's double points for those of you scoring at home. Triple jump went down as well. Again, I reserve the right to correct this later on. It was preposterously quick. I know, because the sprints at altitude, you're going to get a little bit of bump. And the women this year have been really good. So I thought, you know, Julian Alford's been breaking the collegiate record basically every week.
Yes.
So it makes sense that she'd keep going. But I thought her running the collegiate record in the 200, nobody saw coming. And then in the four, you know, there was, what, three women before Femke Bol, sub 50. And then Femke Bol became the fourth. And then now Britton Wilson went 49 mid, which I thought was cool.
It's got to be the Vaporflies for sure.
Well, and I don't know how fast would she be at Apeldoorn. Like, I know that this was altitude, but Apeldoorn even better. So I guess we could start there with those sprint performances on the women's side. Alfred 6.94. So that's as fast as Aaliyah Hobbs ran in Albuquerque this year too. So you have an Albuquerque to Albuquerque comparison, which I think is kind of good. And Alfred was low 10.8s. You know, Hobbs is older than her, but two women there who are at different stages of their career, but both seemingly looking like they could break into the medals this year.
Yeah. I think I've said it before, but you know, the 60, like, I'm like, you know, it's its own thing. Like, obviously if you're good at the 60, it's going to translate well to the 100. But when you set records in the 60 and the 200, I'm way more interested in what you've done, because that tells me a lot more that, like, you can finish your 100, for instance, you know, and you have the starting ability. So yeah, the 6.94 mixed with the 22.01, 100% a medal contender. I don't know if I'd pick, the American women, you know, like there's some a lot of good young talent in there right now, but she might be the top pick. The only thing.
Well, she's not American. She's an American.
Yeah, oh, you know, I just mean, like, because I was thinking of the three Jamaicans.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. Like, oh, you're talking about this. Okay.
Just this, as a whole. So you have the three Jamaicans, which, you know, at least two of them will be great. Figure out which two. Go ahead. But maybe all three. You have good young Americans. But no, I don't think I'd have anyone else over her except for the Jamaicans. And you know, like
Asher,
I said,
Smith, maybe Asher Smith.
Yeah. And I kind of feel like they might be in a similar, a similar way. I think the only thing against her is that she's going to have this crazy long NCAA season.
Yeah.
At the end of those, we've just seen people fade a little bit when it gets to championship time, because they have a separate championship and they have all these other things, but she's unbelievable and she'll be really, really good.
Yeah. Just look at the whole series that she ran. I mean, she broke the collegiate record in the semis again. Her record, and then earlier this year, it was like, oh man, maybe she could break seven, and then she's breaking seven in prelims. It's just, the consistency in the 60 is remarkable. I mean, there's a, I don't know, give her some competition. Like, put her and Aaliyah Hobbs on the track together. Do they break the world record?
Yeah.
Against each other?
I think I might pick it, yeah. At this point. I mean, they're both so close.
Two 100s. Both had great indoor seasons. But Alford, I agree with you. The really revealing performance about Alford is the 2201. That's number two in history.
No, that right? was... Yeah. I mean, she went out really hard, and she's a good starter.
As one does in the 200.
Yeah, but like, I mean, it was just like one of those things where it looked like, you know, she was just holding it as much as possible, but looked, I mean, unbelievable. You run 2201 indoors. That's ridiculous. I thought she was going to kind of fade around the that last stretch.
Yeah.
But no, she's like I said, the fact that she's so good at both, that's what is really kind of making it. So I'm like, oh yeah, she's going to be easy medal contender.
Then we have the 400 with Britton Wilson. She also ran a really good 4x4 leg, but we'll stick to the quarter for now. American record. I think she could have gone faster too, because she had to pass Talitha Diggs on the backstretch, and she went wide. Probably got a shot of adrenaline because of the, you know, having to make the move, but also she was running extra distance there. Wilson is incredible. She's run a bunch of 800s indoors this year. Got second at SEC. Could have run the 800 in this meet. She's obviously four-meter hurdler primarily when it comes to her track record, because she got fourth at Worlds. But incredibly versatile athlete, another foreign hurdler who's running a really solid flat four. My only takeaway from this is just anticipation about outdoor. Like, how is all this going to work out outdoors between all these 3 to 4 women who are all good in the 400 hurdles and the 400. I don't know what's going to happen, but it's going to be fast, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's going to be really good. They're all really young. They're all really good. It's kind of fascinating. So at least no matter what, you know, it's not some situation where, oh, you know, this runner is moving up and then this one's taking over and it's still like this domination type thing. It's like, no matter what, you know, okay, maybe if Sydney stays not in the hurdles, okay, it's going to be tough to beat, fair. But anything in the open four, you got to figure at least, you know, a couple of these women are going to end up squaring off, which is going to be great. You know, if Femke can make a leap in the hurdles, maybe she can, you know, close that gap a little bit. Yeah, I mean, if you're Wilson, like, what do you... I mean, it'd be so tempting to go to the 400, but man, I guess you just kind of play both hands until you figure out what everybody else is doing.
We got an email about this. I'll read it now. Actually, it's from a Noah, so we want to spread out our Noahs. I guess this is from New York, formerly of Greater Boston. I know you guys will have covered Britton Wilson, but I want to focus on the strange loyalty and fascination that the world's best women's 400-meter runners seem to have to the event with hurdles added in, breaking this down person by person. So he goes through several different women who have run the 400 hurdles, gives them a brief synopsis about what's going on, and then also his recommendation, what should they do. So first was Sydney. This one makes sense at face value. Sydney is the best ever at it and has demolished her competition while taking the record to a silly place. The flip side now is, what's the upside? You can understand sticking with the event you have so far dominated, though. And the recommend, what should they do? Double. Sydney is good enough to win the 400 hurdles and might as well go for a legendary status with triple gold, relay, hurdles, and flat. I agree with that. I agree with everything Noah says.
Can't argue with that at all.
Next is Femke Bol. It's hard to critique someone for choosing the event they're second or maybe third best at. If Dalila was fully healthy, it's close as of last year. However, Femke just ran 49.2 indoors, which is about a second off of what we think the first non-roided up USSR woman has ever run outdoors. Meanwhile, her 400 hurdles PB is 1.3 off Sydney's mark, and she struggles technically with her stride pattern and hurdling. Listen to Noah out here.
I say, man. Critiquing. All right, I like it.
I tip my hand here. Run the 400 is what he's recommending. What are we doing here? Sure, Femke loves to compete, so a double could be okay. At least she would break 51, as I predicted. But when you're potentially fast enough to win the 400, Polino 48.99 is great but beatable. Why add hurdles and voluntarily take on the greatest ever, who has so far been vastly superior at the boring stuff like hurdling? Also, why focus on the event you are worse at and have a worse chance of winning? That's a compelling argument.
It's a great argument. At the same time, I don't know if she's worse at it, because she's going to end up having this probably the second fastest. She's the second fastest woman in history.
In history, yeah, yeah.
So, like, she's really, really great at the 400 meter hurdles. It's just how insanely great Sydney is. But I don't necessarily disagree with his end thought, which is probably makes sense to for Bull to run the open four. But it also, I think Sydney does the double. So I think he's right there.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, if Femke Bol wants to win a gold medal, which I imagine she does, I think she has a better chance in the 400, especially if, you know, Sydney pulling double duty there.
Mm-hmm.
I also think there's a chance she runs a double just because she seems to like to run a lot.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
She's young and she's really great at both. And hey, you give yourself a puncher's chance, whatever, to win either.
I'm going to keep it going here because he's got more athletes.
Yeah, please.
Muhammad, I'll keep this short. This one is defensible. Her PR is 50.6, and she splits mid-49s on the relay, so maybe she could improve to low 50s, but she's not competitive globally at the 400 while excellent hurdling. For once, he says, stick with hurdling. Britton Wilson, this one is maddening. After the race, she said her favorite race was the 400. She just ran 49.4 indoors. Her PR outdoors for the 400 hurdles is 53.08, yeah, almost 2.5 seconds back of Sydney, and she ran 50.0 for the 400 and split 49s last year. She's faster now, but she was already fast. I have a reality check. If you're 3 seconds slower at the 400 hurdles, you are bad at the hurdling part. Yet, she said she still plans on running her second favorite event and her second best event, the 400 hurdles, at USA's and Worlds. He says, switch to the 400. Heck, give the 800 a shot. Britton, you're amazing at running. Why add hurdles into the mix and worry about 14 or 15 steps. This is obvious. It keeps going here. Shamir Little, close. Shamir could get in the relay pool, and I'd be stunned if she couldn't get top six at USA's. She can make top three outright. Her PB is 49.9, and she has a 50.6 this indoor season. Meanwhile, hurdles, she's run 52 low, but hasn't been consistently there. And he recommends go to the 400 unless everyone comes to their senses and switches events. And then Michaela Rose, who ran the 800 at NCAA's and got third. This one's actually hard. She's run 20.18 for the 8, 56.6 for the hurdles, and splits 51 high, 52 low in the 4x4. So I'll toss out the 400 because it doesn't seem like she'd have a chance at the NCAA USA level. That being said, the 800 time is currently the best performance. He says, give the 800 or 400 an equal shot outdoors. Commit to the 800 if you run under 159.5. Go with the 400 hurdles if you break 55. If neither, run the 400 hurdles because it'll be the easier NCAA event with the Stanford Phenoms in the 8. And the last person, Anna Cockrell, just to show I'm fair, here's a pure hurdler who 100% should stay with the hurdles. She runs well down to 100 hurdles and has no great marks on the flash, so she can stay in the hurdles. When thinking about this phenomenon, the funny thing is there's nothing like it either in the 110 hurdles, 100 hurdles, or 400 hurdles for men. Rye Benjamin's a 44 flat type guy, but nobody would argue he's in his second best event considering he's right there with the best ever hurdles and would trail Michael Norman, Stephen Gardner, and so on at their best, let alone the all-time greats. Carson is similar. Grant Holley is fast, but in the 100, he would struggle to make U.S. finals. Same for the Jamaican hurdlers. Omar McLeod, also very fast, but not world-class, let alone Trey Cunningham, Devin Allen, Camacho Quinn, Amusan, etc. I'm not seeing any sub-11-1 PBs. Really, the only guy who at all resembles this trend historically is Caron Clement. He was a really bad hurdler. I think he's talking about technically, but the event was so weak. It's hard to blame him for staying away from Jeremy Warner, Merritt, and later Wade Van Niekerk. He ended up running a watered-down event, even if he was probably better at the 400 and winning golds as a result. The scenario is just not in play for these women, and I hope they soon are running their best events and losing the inexplicable fixation with the hurdles. That is Noah. So some tongue in cheek there from Noah, but I think a person who's super duper fast is going to be pretty good in the hurdles. The women's hurdles, I mean, they've talked about the height of those hurdles for a while now, And hey, yeah. do we need to raise them? Because they could just step over them. So that might have something to do with it. I don't know. Someone can do a little analysis of average height of a male hurdler compared to the height of the hurdle and compared to the women. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's some of it. So the flat speed matters more for the women than it does for the men. For the men, the technique matters a little bit more. That could have something to do with it. But yeah, we're in an era right now where, and maybe this is just because as this generation, people poured into every, you know, there's just more talent entering the sport, going to different events, more specialization, more people specializing younger, and this is the result that you see. Side note, though, on Rye Benjamin, I'm not entirely joking when I say he should, like, think about the quarter this year.
Well, yeah, especially because the quarter is very weak, as we've discussed multiple times on the show. If, you know, I think Michael Norman's going to run the 400, you know, despite what we talked about for like a half hour a few weeks ago, just because he would be not very smart not to. Stephen Gardner's great. Mm-hmm. I presume he'll be great. So that's two guys. And then you have that next group with like Van Niekerk, Zimbrano, Karani James, that those guys who are, you know, 43 highs, 44 lows. So it's open. And I do think Benjamin's a sub 44 guy. Not like drastically so, but I definitely think he can run, you know, 43. So if a few things were to break right, like if for whatever reason Michael Norman didn't run the 400,
yeah,
then I would, yeah, I think I'd be aboard that because, you know, it then you're not dealing with Warholm or Dos Santos, you know, Dos Santos presumably coming back and being normal.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is interesting, though, just kind of how that happens, because generally, and it's, you know, it's some of it's just randomness or whatever, but you would generally think people of this crazy level of talent, right? Like the highest of the high, the ones who are, you know, can run sub 44 for men, sub 50 for women, generally you would think they would err towards the flat four.
Yeah.
Just because it's the more marquee event. It's still brutal, but maybe not as brutal as running hurdles in addition to it. It's just more marquee. You know, it's just, I don't know. I just feel like that's usually the case. Right now, we're in a crazy talent boom in hurdles.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether it's just pure randomness or when they were coming up just a few years ago, then, you know, they were like, oh, here's a chance to, the 400 is always going to be strong. Here's a chance. If I have this kind of elite speed and I run the hurdles, mm-hmm. I'm going to be the best in the world. I have no idea if that was like part of the thought process, but it's just, or if it's just pure dumb luck.
Maybe just versatility, right? Like I talked about specialization before, but also, hey, these skills are transferable too.
For sure.
We started you out as a 400 hurdler and we put a bunch of hours and time into that, but also you're just ridiculously fast. So run a 400, run a 200, run an 800. Like the fact that Britton Wilson ran more 800s in the lead up to this NCAA meet than 400s just goes to show you how when you're talented, it doesn't really matter.
Hmm. Interesting.
Okay, come on, dude. You can't make everything about Carson Warholm running 145.
I just throwing it out there. I guess Warholm's not talented enough to run the 800 is what you're saying.
Maybe he could break 45.4 in an indoor 400 and then we could talk or whatever he did this year. All right, let's keep moving though. That was the tangent of all tangents. We're doing an NCAA recap. So that was Wilson in the 400. We talked about Julian Alfred. Akira Nugent broke the 60 meter hurdle NCAA record. What else did we have in these races? What was the other big one we had? Oh, I guess we could. Should we just play the American record song now? But then, so you got to play it for Jasmine Moore, who broke the NCAA record six times, Jace, between the long jump and the triple jump and American record. And then Kyle Garland didn't break the American record. Excuse me, Eaton still has that and the world record. So I think we have Jasmine Moore and who I'm just playing. Britton Wilson, American record song. Why don't we do that before we move on?
Hey man, did you see that record? No, not a world, but an American record. Maybe it was a world record too. It was the best performance by an American citizen, or a relay team composed of American citizens, and an athletics event within the United States or abroad. Hey man, did you see that American record?
All right, so other results. Let's go on the distance side of things.
Yeah.
Tui, what did you think of her two wins? That's NCAA titles, individual titles 3 and 4 for her.
Yeah, I mean, you can't be surprised just because she's great, and that's what great runners do. When you're getting 3 and 4, that's, I'm like, yeah, okay. I expected her to win these, even though, like, not to say she was, like, a lock, but, yeah, mm-hmm. it seemed likely, and she was it's insanely impressive, so it's always fun.
Pretty dominant.
Yeah.
It was not, you know, cross, well, last year, outdoors, it was her first one. You're like, oh, okay, that's a big deal.
Yep.
Get your first title, and she'd start out solid as a freshman, but then you had the COVID year and everything getting disrupted. She was the top freshman in cross country one of those years, but she wasn't. Her freshman year, she was a top freshman year in cross country. That actually makes sense, Kevin, when you say it like that. But she wasn't vying for the win as a freshman, but she kept progressing. I think people thought, oh, because she was great in high school, she's going to come in and be great. And if not, it's a disaster. No, she actually had this interesting progression where she went to college and got better little by little by little, which is kind of, and now she's really, really good because she was starting from such a high place. But then you had a cross, and Valby is really good, and she's tearing it up, and we're talking about Tui versus Valby, and then Valby goes out to the big lead, and then Tui reels her in the final mile, and then now you watch these championships, and granted, part of it was because, Valby wasn't there, so that takes away one big rival, but man, she just dominated both of these. Like, when she decided the race was over, it was done. That was it, and that's just... At the NCAA level, you see that sometimes, but...
Yeah, she's kind of reached that level where it's just like, hey, I'm too good for this.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's like, hey, there's some, a lot of great runners here, but it's like, you see it, we see it with NCAA athletes sometimes where it's just like, they just are like, oh, you know what, this is a pro in a college race.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just, it's a different level. And she kind of, like you mentioned, it was like, she's always, you know, she's came in with the huge reputation, but it's like I kind of transformed in this runner. I don't know. Not, like I said, it wasn't right away in college, yeah. but it like once it happened, it was like, oh, okay, yeah, now I just want to see you race against pros.
Well, you contrast that to the men's distance races or even the women's mile, where she wasn't in that race, and they were absolutely going down to the wire type races. In the last lap, you still have all this drama, and the women's 3 and the women's 5, it was just over. it was going to go on for as long as she wanted it to go on, and then it was going to end. And when it ended, she made that move in the 5,000. She made that move with 4 laps ago or 2 laps ago, something like that. And it was just, you look up and there's just this gap already, and you know nobody's going to come back from it. Just powers away and gets the win. So again, not surprising, but it is just to see the evolution is pretty interesting. Talked about Moore breaking the record, the long and the triple. Men's side of things, so 60, Terrence Jones from Bahamas gets it done. 200, Matthew Bowling wins another indoor title. Didn't win last year, but that's his second individual title. Elijah Godwin, sub 45 in the quarter. And then the 800, we had a little controversy in the 800.
Yeah.
A little DQ action here. Navaski Anderson, who runs for Mississippi State, represents Jamaica, went half Chelimo? I wouldn't even say a full Chelimo.
Yeah, he went into lane 3.
Yeah, but that's not...
And then a little bit of arm. Yeah, I mean, he was way out in front for almost the whole race. And then, you know, you could see he was fighting it. And he just kept drifting.
You're a big DQ guy. He never hit Bizimana, though. I don't think he ever made contact. Bizimana falls down, but I don't. Did he touch him?
I mean, he might have grazed him. He went into lane three.
So you're.
You don't go in. If he drifted into lane two, okay, fine. I accept it. If you go to lane three, yeah, you're out. Get out of here.
Yeah. Man, this made me look up my favorite non-DQ call of all time. I think you and I argued about this for 20 minutes when it happened. Do you remember the one I'm talking about?
I remind me.
2018 World Indoors, you wanted to DQ Sifan Hassan, the GOAT, for obstructing Laura Muir.
That's right.
In a 3K, I think it was 3K. Dibaba won. This was the race for silver. And what Hassan did was so much more egregious than what
Hassan was like. It was the biggest no-brainer of all time.
Oh, and her arm was out too.
Yeah, no, Hassan literally was blocking her, like she was boxing out for a rebound.
It was a great no-call. I loved it then. When I rewatched it, I laughed and loved it even more.
I mean, he's in literally the middle of lane three at the end of the race.
There needs to be some limit to it. I get it. Otherwise, he could run him all the way out into the rail if he want, or the outside railing in lane six. But also, it's just since there's no contact, it's weird. And since he was in front of him already. The problem is you got the tight quarters. If that was a longer straightaway and he starts drifting, then
someone has time to come back. 15 meters, he goes dead sideways.
Do you think he even needed to? That was the other weird part about this. He might have won, straight up won.
Yeah, it would have been close, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's literally...
I feel for him.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks, because he ran great. I mean, 145.9, too. That's a really good time.
Yeah.
Probably win you a gold medal outdoors. Just don't even laugh at my ripping on the 800 joke. We've done them too much. They're done.
Sorry, you were very subtle with that one. I didn't even catch my attention.
I don't know. I think, to me, you go into lane three. You can drift into lane two, because, I get it. It's like, you're subconsciously doing it, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes, it's not even intentional. You go out to lane three, come on.
Here's the thing I said with Chelimo is I was not for DQing Chelimo because my thought process is, okay, you do that. You choose that strategy, but then you have to live with the repercussions, which is you're leaving lane one and in his case, lanes two, three, four, five, six open for someone to pass you. And if you're not making contact – since you're in front, you have a right of way, and you can keep that line and go diagonally to the finish. But indoors, it just looks different for some reason. Well, I know why, because the track's shorter. But I guess I'm not against this DQ. But I was surprised they called it, actually.
Yeah, actually, I expected them not to be honest.
Right. Because there was no contact, and you look at the Hassan one, and
Hassan was so bad.
Well, but she only went out into two. But she clearly moves, and then I don't know if she made her arms are out. Basically,
yeah, she's trying to block. Which guy did that too?
Chelimo did that in a Diamond League and got DQ'd.
His arm was
literally out, and that's the thing. That I'm 100%. You got to go on that one. Once the arm extends, it's the ones where you're just drifting out and moving out where there's really no clear. I mean, this is where we need that official that we talked about. What were they called? What would have happened?
Right. Yeah. And this one would have been I think he would have won, but I'm not sure. I think 75% chance he still wins, but I don't know. Just.
It just happened really quickly. The Chelimo one, there was such a windup because you have 100 meters straightaway, and it just kept going and going and going to the point where people are thinking, this is ridiculous now.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous. With Anderson, it was more he comes off the current turn, and then because he didn't even turn around, he just took a – didn't it seem as if he just took a diagonal –
He literally goes, yeah, he goes, angle? He feels him because.
No, I think he sees him. I think he sees him on the monitor.
He's watching. So he's, so, it, you know, but I think he knows exactly what he's doing.
Oh, I agree. I agree he knew where he was going, but he was very intentional, and that made it look, to me, less incriminating than if someone's looking over their shoulder three times and then making a beeline to the outside. That just looks...
Because...
Okay, you're just there to screw up somebody else's race.
I'm rewatching the ending like 60 times in a row here.
Yeah, yeah.
Bizimon is coming on hard.
Oh, yeah.
And he was closing. And because of the change of direction... He has to slow down. The more I watch this, the more I think Bizimon might have won this race.
All right.
Fair. I don't know. If you watch this last little stretch, I mean, he is closing super hard, and as soon as Anderson goes sideways, he has to break his stride.
Yeah. You know what I'm terrible at, I realized? Predicting how indoor races are going to end based on where people are on the track, maybe just because I'm less familiar with the markings. Outdoors... Well, I do think everything's going to be a world record. I'm pretty good at telling...
Yeah, I'm always off with the time outdoors, for sure.
Yeah, but I can say that person's going to catch this person or this person's going to not catch that person. I have an idea in my head of how much time is left. I don't know. It's just because some of these straightaways or how the cameras are positioned, a lot of times it just plays tricks on you, and then you're watching and you're like, oh, no way, not going to get them, and then they just fly by with like 15 meters to go, and then other times I think it's going to be this epic comeback and they completely run out of track. So if you're telling me you think Bizimana would have got him, I know he came from way behind. With 150 to go, he was still
back. No, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have bet on that until, you know, just the way he accelerated off that turn. I think at the very least we're talking a couple hundredths. You know, yeah. Either way, to me, it looks more and more like a coin flip after watching it for the 78th time.
Yeah, it's just a bummer that we didn't get them really running all the way to the line against each other, because it would have been a great finish without a DQ.
For sure. And I mean, if I was in that weird whatever position we called that.
Official.
The special name we called it. I don't know. Then I can just go, you know what, Anderson, you get silver. You're not DQ'd.
Oh, that's your ruling?
You get, because you were going to finish second.
Gotcha, I like it.
You prevented us from seeing how this could have ended. It was a coin flip, but only it was a coin flip because you decided to go out to lane 3.
Yeah.
No, so you get silver.
That's fair. That's fair. Sondre Guttormsen of Norway. Collegiate record, 6 meters in the pole vault. It's kind of exciting.
Nice.
Another 6 meter vaulter. Scandinavia, too.
Right? It's the big
budding rivalry.
Right?
Does Mondo need to check his rearview mirror?
He's got to adjust the mirror down, though, a while. And that's not an insult to anybody else. It's just how far Mondo is ahead of everybody else. But you're right. Once you get above 6 meters, though, you could win meets.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you know, like, I mean, Mondo's going to get over 6, you know, pretty much in his sleep. But like anybody else, you're right there. And then Mondo has the occasional one where it's like he only, you know, only goes 6:02 or whatever. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to talk about real quickly was we always talk about the epic 4x4s at the end of these meets when you have the team title on the line. And we had it in this one on the women's side, Texas and Arkansas.
Yep.
You know, winner gets it, and they're both in the 4x4, and they're both in the same 4x4 heat. It doesn't get any better than that. And then Arkansas proceeded to destroy, as they should have, because they qualified 6 women.
I was say, yeah, it makes sense, but it's like, oh man, this is gonna be awesome.
And Texas got second. Texas women were great in the 4x4, but they lost by 4 seconds. Arkansas's time was faster than the outdoor time. It would be a quote-unquote, it's the fastest 4x4 of a run. It's just not a world record because not all the members are from Jamaica, but it was just setting up to be a potentially dramatic finish. And then within what, 2 legs, it's just like, okay, this is,
it was just like, oh, okay, then, this is
and they have Britt Wilson. You have Britt Wilson waiting on anchor. You're just,
yeah, it's just like, all right, come on, this is, yeah. Yeah, it was, you know, they went 1-2. It was still fun.
Better than, I know, very but... misleading. Very misleading, though.
Yeah.
It just, it was,
yeah, it's not everything often was... you see 6 sets of initials after a time. You got season's best CL, collegiate.
Collegiate lead.
That one?
Collegiate lead.
Yeah. Collegiate lead. Mm-hmm. Gee, come on, collegiate lead. We don't need to put that one there, guys. Well,
not when you have collegiate record. It's sort of redundant.
Even then, collegiate lead's like a real you're reaching a little bit. World lead, meet record.
Six is the most. I guess you could get. Well, I mean, if world record got
world record, yeah.
I guess American record. So wait, what does Britton Wilson have by hers? Let's look.
Oh yeah.
Does she have seven by hers? Does she have seven letters? PB, collegiate lead, facility record, meet record. Oh, they're not even putting American record on this because they're just doing the NCAA ones. But yeah, you could get – because Jasmine Moore could have had AR next to hers too.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I like a lot of initial – just collegiate lead. Like, come on. We could get – yeah.
Facility record? Well, this is actually legit facility.
Yeah, they run a lot of stuff here. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I'll be in Albuquerque at the end of the month. How about, you know?
Oh, really? I didn't
know
that.
Go back to our old stomping grounds.
What are you going to do?
For work. Got a casino opening.
No, but like, what are you going to do for fun?
You know what? I got to figure it out. Mm. What's that place we went to that had really good green chili burger? Do you remember that?
Oh, the place by the university?
I think so. I think we went there with a track fan. Jesse Squire, I believe.
Track super fan. The Frontier with the cinnamon rolls.
Right? Frontier, that was it. Yep. I'm going to go there for sure.
There's another good spot, too, I found. I can't remember the name now. Ugh. It'll come to me. But there's another good spot, too.
Yeah, okay. Send it my way.
What else is there to talk about? Some sad news. Dick Fosbury passed away.
Yeah.
And I wanted to talk about that. Obviously, track and field legend, invented the Fosbury flop, 76 years old, passed away of lymphoma. He was the 1968 gold medalist in the high jump. Obviously, before the Fosbury flop came along, people were scissor kicking their way over the bar.
Those old videos, though. I mean, the Fosbury flop is so clearly superior. But those insane old school jumps are so awesome to watch.
The Western roll, they had all these little techniques, but they all just looked really painful when they're jumping into sawdust. And to think, Jason, to think it was his method that was supposed to be the silly looking one. And then you go back and you look at those videos and it looks so like you hear the mute. Like they don't scream athleticism either. Fosbury flop. It's smooth. It's obviously effective. And, you know, he changed the way the event happened. Right. And he to be able to compete in event, to be able to be that good athletically, but also that analytical in how you think. And there's other people who have done this, but not to the extent of Fosbury, not as famously as Fosbury, but just to be able to figure that out, to do the math, to go into the specifics, and then come up with a way that not just one person or a couple people adopt or certain types of jumpers, everybody does it now.
Yeah, it's and like this was the 60s, like this wasn't the, I don't know, the 10s or the 20s, like it seems like it's kind of crazy that it was like revolutionized like not that long ago, like to change it at that point. Like it is a very it's kind of crazy because it's like you just go in not thinking like, hey, how can I change this event? So that's what kind of makes it even more amazing. And it's like, I mean, it honestly is like one of the only ways to truly become immortal, like within the track and field world, like because you could run a world record, you can get a gold medal, but like people forget after periods of time. Like Fosbury flop, like that's a thing that it's named after him. Like he'll be remembered forever, which is, I mean, as much as you could ask for, probably. I'm just looking at this AP article, and in a chapter in his book about the Mexico City Games, journalist Richard Hoffer wrote that Fosbury once received a letter from an LA medical director suggesting his technique would lead to, quote, a rash of broken necks. For the good of young Americans, you should stop this ridiculous attack on the bar, the letter said.
Yeah, that's can you incredible. Imagine that? Can you imagine that?
That's so good. I love a doctor, a medical angry. Director.
Yeah, up in
just
arms. Going,
I am writing to the angriest letter. Children will just be...
Do you know what? Yeah, high jumping is an epidemic. They're doing it in back alleys and at these parties. Do you know what didn't look safe? The old way they were doing
every
it.
Other way, yeah.
Let's go face first into a pile of sawdust, Billy.
Yeah, it's so funny that it's just one of those. It's just funny, like the retrospect of those kind of things. But it, I mean, it truly was. I mean, like I said, everyone does it. There's no argument about what the right way to high jump is. It's done.
And it didn't come. It didn't come from years of study or coaches or anything like that. It came from a guy who was actively competing, which is cool, I think, to be able to have the wherewithal. Because you think of some of the outlandish innovations in sports, and they seem to start at the like lower levels. And maybe there was some other people experimenting and tinkering with the stuff at lower levels, but he did it and won gold.
Right.
In Mexico
yeah.
City.
And, it's like it's
yeah. Very interesting story, interesting guy. I was reading that AP article, there was stuff in there I didn't notice about his past. So I recommend people do a deep dive. This is one you're gonna want to do a deep dive on if you haven't. I'm sure most people are familiar if they're listening to the pod, but in case you aren't. I mean, this is from the article. It says the technique was a subject of scorn and ridicule in some corners. The term Fosbury flop is credited to the Medford Mail Tribune, which wrote the headline, Fosbury flops over the bar after one of his high school meets. The reporter wrote that Fosbury looked like a fish flopping in a boat. Fosbury liked Fosbury flop. It's poetic. It's alliterative. It's a conflict, he once said. That's a good series of sentences right
Man.
There from Mr. Fosbury. Yeah, and then also talked about he was able to deal with some of the ridicule because he had tragedy in his life, right? His brother.
Yeah.
His younger brother got hit by a drunk driver when both of them were riding bikes when they were boys.
Jeez, I can't even imagine.
Yeah. So it was his life was incredible, really incredible. And we got an email about somewhat related to this that I wanted to read. Where is it? Oh, here it is. From Tim. Sad news about the legendary Dick Fosbury passing over the weekend. As one does, I went on his Wikipedia page after his death and was surprised to read about the video for the Avicii song Broken Arrows, which was based somewhat on Fosbury's development of the Fosbury flop and his win at the Mexico City Games. I did not pay enough attention to the lyrics to make any connection between the song and the video, but I wondered what the story was there that led to a pairing of somewhat country twangy club song with the narration of a guy inventing a new high jump technique. Yeah, I watched the video.
I did not, but I need to now.
Yeah, it's very interesting. The lyrics, yeah, I wasn't following along. I didn't see how they were connected, but it was definitely a guy who was jumping, and it seems like he has a strained relationship with his daughter, and he picks up the flop from her because she's practicing gymnastics, and then he does it. I don't – spoiler alert, he wins the competition at the end. But
oh, I was just about to watch it, Kevin.
Sorry. Well, I'll give you some Ted Lasso spoilers next. He says, I want your opinion on this. Other than Fosbury, what other track and field athletes do you feel have achieved name association for a move or technique, or which ones do you think have the potential to? If I say someone in a race does a Chelimo in the final stretch, is that ubiquitous enough that we can say it without any explanation? Could Krauser's new throwing technique eventually become something so groundbreaking that everyone starts using it and takes on his name? RIP to a great one. Thanks, Tim in Virginia. Thanks for the email, Tim. I don't think the throwing stuff would be enough because look at just how dramatically different the scissors technique or the Western roll looked to the Fosbury flop. It wasn't a small change. It was a dramatic change. So I think it would need to be something drastic. Also, it was to an event that not everybody's a diehard high jump fan, but I think people are interested in it enough. Like, what's the highest you can get over that bar? Right? Like, yeah,
it's easy to relate to yourself, right? Like when you just see a bar, like someone standing next to the bar and it's like above their head.
Yeah.
It's like something that everyone can kind of relate to in a sense.
Well, the basics of it, he figured out, okay, I don't need to get everything over all at once.
Right.
He did the math. He figured it out with his center of gravity and all that other stuff. And I don't know. There's nothing. The genius in it is it was so simple. And I don't know if there's anything out there left that is that simple. I thought of a couple just specific track nerd ones that they don't fit in the category. They don't have the name. But what does every person do when they stand on the long jump runway or triple jump runway? What do they do? It doesn't matter if you're at track practice screwing around. You could be taking a tour of Hayward Field, or you could be actually competing. What do you do when you step on that runway?
I mean,
first thing you do,
like the measuring it out, the steps, or the clap, or
the clap.
Okay,
right. And Willie Banks invented the rhythmic clap.
That's right. Yeah, that's a good one.
I think that's one. The other one I thought of, it's not a technique, but just, I don't know, man. They always just mention whenever a football player hurdles somebody. They either mention Ronaldo Nehemiah or Edwin Moses.
Right. It's true.
And
it's a good point. Yeah.
It's as if they invented hurdling.
Yeah. Because they were just so, ubiquitous with hurdling.
They were good at the right time. They were good when Al Michaels was paying attention to track. So then Al Michaels started saying, Calvin Johnson looking like Ronaldo Nehemiah out there. And then every other announcer heard it, repeated it. So that's not the exact same thing. That's not an innovation, but I guess an association of a person with a physical feat.
Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah, man, it's really tough because it kind of shows you how rare.
Yeah.
This is just because it's like, I'm having a hard time, coming up with something. I mean, it's even in other sports. Yeah. I'm trying to think like, you know, there are certain like moves or whatever that, you know, okay, it's a Jordan-esque kind of thing.
Yeah,
or stuff like that. But it's
Dream Shake.
Yeah, the Dream Shake, absolutely. Yeah, but that's a good question. I don't know. I'm sure we're not thinking of some, but that's a great one.
Well, most of them we have a general idea how to do the event most effectively.
Right.
There's a couple different there's different tweaks in how you do a long jump, right? Are they going to do the hang technique or a hitch kick and all this other stuff? But in general, you're taking off here and landing there. Little tweaks. Same thing with shot put. Spin or glide. Different stuff.
Right.
It's as if people only did one technique. All of a sudden, someone came up with a brand new one that never caused anybody to go back to the old way and also just looked so different. Maybe there'll be someone in a bunch of years who just does the pole vault differently. I don't know right? how it would look, but they're just, okay, this is the tool I have. Here are the limitations. I'm going to go over it in a completely different way. Because that's what Fosbury did. The tool was his body, though, and he just said, okay, this is the space I have. I'm going to approach it in a parabolic run up as opposed to just charging at the thing,
right?
Running parallel to it in what appears to be some of the least athletic videos of all time, although those people were jumping pretty damn high too still. But yeah, it was the perfect event, the perfect technique tweak, and the perfect guy with Fosbury. And the name, he's right. It's alliterative. Right.
The Fosbury flop just works. It's it's one thing if, I don't know.
The Halpin flop.
I would say the Halpin, If I invented this 60 years ago, it would just be like, well, that's the move. It's the high jump move. Like, it wouldn't even be named after anything.
One more on this, one more tangent.
Yeah.
I'm not writing a book, but were I to write a book, 68 Olympics. For a track?
Yeah.
Pretty interesting. Obviously, you have the very, very important Tommy Smith, John Carlos.
Yeah.
salute, Black Power salute on the podium, and the Peter Norman story that we've been into for, you know, ran for Australia also on the podium, and not a lot of people know that story. That happened. You have Bob Beamon's jump.
Yeah.
One of the most famous performances in track and field history. And then you have Fosbury busting out the flop. Is there a more influential Summer Olympics for track and field? And then to expand that question further, is there a more any sport? Did any sport have a Olympics that were on anywhere near the level of that? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I was just looking at like the results.
Yeah,
world records in the 1, 2, 4, and 8 on the men's side. That's pretty fun.
Okay, maybe I do write the book,
right? And the 400-meter hurdles, and the 4x1, and the 4x4, and the long jump, and the triple jump.
So Jim Hines he's the first sub-10, too.
Yeah,
I mean, he didn't do it in that.
No, but meet, yeah, it's,
but
yeah,
I think he. Yeah,
Jim Ryan was a runner-up in the 15.
Was there some sort of? Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'll put the, like, in terms of performances, I don't, like, did just the evolution of. I don't know. I guess I really have no idea. I don't know what's it. This mainly is me trying to. I should just text our friend Nick, Olympic expert, and ask him if this is the answer. I just want to know. The marathon was 1:02:20 for the men. Solid.
I know. It is fun to sometimes look back at times and just be like, wow, that is. I mean, it's a long time ago.
Right? Because you could say, oh yeah, it was at altitude, and that's why. But like, the altitude doesn't have anything to do with Fosbury deciding to flop. Right. It doesn't have anything to do with the medal protest. It's just very interesting. Well, that was the Madeline Manning. She won for the 800 for the U.S. So the last it was her until the thing, Mo, right? Last 800-meter gold medalist for the U.S. Yeah. Women did the pentathlon back then. I don't know.
The first Olympics to use an all-weather track.
Oh. Really?
It's official. The book has to happen.
Well, but that's probably why we're getting the world records, right?
I mean, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Okay, but especially that takes
like all the sprints, but
that takes one thing. But again, it doesn't. There's some other stuff going on here too.
And it's first Olympics. I guess maybe, you know, it been used in other meets, but it's the first Olympics. Yeah. But obviously you get the best. Yeah.
Exactly. According to Wikipedia, the world record was broken in the men's triple jump 5 times by 3 athletes.
Oh my God.
The top 5 finishers all beat the previous world record. Probably because of the shoes.
It's got to be what it is.
I don't want to ruin it for you, but I'm pretty sure it was the shoes. All right. I just was curious about that, and I know people like it when I bring up things that I'm curious about on the pod.
I mean, yeah.
For other people to dig into. Okay. Let me see. What is next? Oh, yeah. Let's talk about history being made at a Masters track meet in the United States. Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
They said it couldn't be done, Jason. But he does it. Runs 6:70 to win Heat 6 of the 25. I don't know if it was Heat 6. Man, I'm surprised he ran. I guess we could start there. Gordon and I talked about this on the Flow Track podcast. We commented mostly on the reaction to the race because we found it humorous.
Yes.
That people both were losing their mind about how fast it was and also going out of their way to tell him how slow he was.
Right.
I also thought, I didn't bring this up yet, I just thought of this, 6:70 do my math on this. Is that halfway between 6:46 and 6:94?
Yeah.
So that's the men's winning NCAA time from this past weekend and the women's.
Okay. Yeah.
Do with that what you will. But right. I just thought that was interesting.
That is interesting. I mean, it's cool that he ran. I think it's fun, you know? Obviously, yeah, the reactions is the really thing. Because it's like, for Tyreek, it's like, cool, man. You ran track a real long time ago. And he was good, right? Like, I mean, he was, would have been a, could have been a professional sprinter. Like, if he fully dedicated himself, who knows how good he would have been, but could have been a professional sprinter. Like, legit, that level of talent. But obviously, the, you know, this shows what we always talk about, where it's like, that's cool that people constantly bring up, like, his high school times and how good he was back then. But track athletes continue to run track, and they get faster after high school.
Yeah.
And then NFL athletes play NFL football, which is also very difficult, but a different kind of thing. And you can't just switch to the other and be great at it, right? Like Tyreek Hill, 670. Like, that's fast for an NFL player. That's really fast. It's not in the ballpark of professional runners.
Do you think he's the fastest NFL guy right now? Or I guess that's an impossible question.
He definitely was. I don't know if he still is or not, but he's on the short list, right?
So let's say he's in the top 10. I think
that's safe.
So the top. So we have an idea now, because he ran hard. He ran all the way through the line. His start was pretty good too. It wasn't as if he was falling out of the blocks or anything like that. That's probably
one thing. Like, I would guess starting wise, I mean, just like NFL, that would translate well. Like, you're waiting for the place to start. Like, being quick off the line is probably a good thing.
My point is, most people would be surprised that the fastest guy in the NFL runs 6.7. They would have thought he's a lot faster. And maybe there's another guy faster, but I don't think there's a guy much faster than Tyreek Hill right now. Anecdotally, someone will probably pull up some next-gen stats and hit me over the face with them. But even if it's 6.60, people would have said that they're a lot quicker than that, just based on how they appear on the field. That's the thing here. We're talking about perception,
for sure.
Too.
Yeah. I mean, it's, and you know, yeah, could somebody run 6.65 maybe? Sure. Let's say that, right? Let's give them that as the best.
Well, because a lot of them did in college. That's the thing, is just it's the more you train, the more you specialize. Now, I reject the whole idea of, man, and this is, he's not even running track and he runs this fast. He's a professional athlete still.
Yeah.
He's not coding all day. Like, let's not pretend like nothing he does in football is preparing him to run fast. It's not the primary. Well, no, it probably is one of the primary things, but it's not at the forefront like it would be if he was just a sprinter. He's not an ideal sprinting shape. He's an ideal football shape. But there's a lot in common with being a wide receiver and having to run fast, right? But
yeah, he's not doing like necessarily like obviously 100 meter workouts in the same way, but like part of his job is to be super fast.
Yeah, right. Like, and there's not
so
many
it's like
job. Yes, yeah.
He is training to be super fast.
Yeah, I just wasn't gonna bend over backwards and give extra kudos and pretend as if we could if he trained a little bit more. We know how good he would be, roughly speaking, if he trained a lot for track, because he's done that already. That's happened. That's been a thing that we've seen, and we have times, and he ran against DeGrasse, and he ran against Bromell, and he ran in World Juniors. Did he do it all the way through? No, but he did it long enough to get a general idea. Now, is there a chance that he could have had a huge improvement when he was 22 or 23 or 24? Yeah, I suppose there's a chance. There's also a chance that was the best he could have run, because we've seen people who do that flatline and don't get any better. The more likely scenario would be somewhere in between. He'd get a little bit better and maybe not a lot better. And that would leave him as, what did you say? A guy who could have been a pro sprinter, maybe made a team or two.
Yeah. I think that's a reasonable take.
Yeah.
Like, if he would have fully done it, he wouldn't have been the greatest sprinter ever. He probably wouldn't have won a medal, but he probably could have been pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, but nobody wants to hear that. Everybody just wants to talk.
And if
about
he
it.
And if right now if he said, "Hey, I'm going to do track," he could train like crazy and probably run 10:12 or 10:06 or something like that, you know? Like, which would be like, "Wow, that's really fast."
Well, with a 6.70, he better be moving on that last.
Yeah, 30. I mean, I'm just saying, like, if he put in like the work to just get better at the 100, You know, I'll get whatever. I'll give him 10-0. That's fine. That's also not anywhere close to top 20 in the U.S. probably right now.
I think what I found interesting about it is I watched him play enough football games, and I watched him play football this year, and he still looks really fast.
He's crazy. He's the fastest. Like, when he's on the field, it is comical how much faster he is than almost everybody else.
And why do we think that? Now that we know he's a 6'7 guy, which is fast but not crazy fast, why do we think that? Well, it's because he's not just running in a straight line, and he's not running 60 that often. It's a burst here, a burst there. It's a cut. He's blown past a linebacker. Not to say that the guys he was running with on over the weekend were NFL linebacker type athletes. I don't know. Maybe they were actually quite similar in terms of speed because they didn't give him much of a race. I think most people would be surprised that, oh, that's what 6'7 looks like. Well, what would a 6'4 person look like out there? Right. But they may not look much different at all, because maybe that 6'4 person doesn't have the first pop that Tyreek Hill does.
Yeah, and like being, you know, in football gear, not out of the blocks, right. Like all those things. Like, yeah, there's a chance that Tyreek Hill will look, you know, I mean, we said Devin Allen, you know, very limited playing time maybe in the NFL. But like, there's a chance that they look pretty similar speed-wise on the field, even though Devin Allen's a faster person.
There's a reason why they run the 40 at the combine and not the 60 meter.
Right.
That's a much better indication. Now, we saw Coleman and what he ran in a 40, and we know what other athletes could do in a 40. I'm not saying the football guys could beat them, but that's where the most value lies in evaluating speed for that sport, for that purpose. And then you add in just what was the most – why did everyone think DK Metcalf was all world? Because he chased down a guy.
Right.
But –
he chased down another football guy.
Who was getting tired because he ran really far. Maybe he took a different angle, or just there's so many speed. The vision of speed can sometimes be very misleading, which is why people thought he ran fast, like blowing out those guys. Like, he didn't know that those guys were basically running an all-comers meet. They thought master's track meant the highest level of track possible. And they didn't, just because he's winning by a lot. You put him in a race where he gets fifth, everyone's going to say, oh, he's slow. And the race could be the Olympic final, and they'd still say he's slow because he looked slow compared to the Olympic champions that he was running against. I was surprised it happened. I saw this image of
him. Yeah, I'm happy it happened. I thought it was fun.
Yeah.
Like, I'm always happy to see, like, the guys try it, because I'm like, oh, I was curious what they could have run in this situation.
How much... He gets a lot of attention when he brings up Bolt's name. Don't you think, Hill? We talk about it, but then there's, if you Google his name, it comes up all the time in all sorts of different media outlets. So my question is, I never thought he'd do this, and if he was going to do it, I would have thought it would have been up for a bunch of money. Not necessarily racing Bolt, but maybe he comes up with some sort of thing where he gets a couple of his buddies together and they time themselves. It just was weird. The route he took was the same route some guy who ran 5 years ago at Cal Berkeley and wanted to see how fast he is in the city. Like, he was signed up for a master's meet.
Yeah.
Is that funny to anybody else?
He
didn't do a super... like pay-per-view, not pay-per-view. I don't know. He could have done something. Could have got a sponsor and made a big deal out of it and challenged Bolt and made a whole show. But he showed up and ran next to like the Letterman from your high school across town who ran 11-2 in the 100. It was very weird.
Yeah, it is. But it's one of those things where I'm like, all right, you're, you know, rich, successful. You're just like, hey, I want to do a meet. And I guess you tell your agent that.
Yeah.
And then they just go,
Masters, this must be serious.
Right? Like, it's...
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah. I'm glad. I hope that stuff keeps happening, just because it's fun. It's a good time.
All right. Emails. houseofrun@gmail.com. Brian from Knoxville.
Yeah.
Writes in. He's the 2000... 22 House of Run podcast honorable mention for sentence of the year.
Yes.
I hope that's on his LinkedIn. One track needs to borrow from Formula One. They wave blue flags at back markers who are about to be lapped. The blue flag indicates that they must let the faster car pass. I'm sure that they had them at Monza in case Kipchoge needed to lap to see.
Oh, that's already in the running for sentence of the year right there. So that's good. Very good.
Oh, but here's another one. He's going to outdo himself on point number two. Two, obviously Jason should just get Isaac to cut his hair while he is in London.
Oh my God. How did we, neither of us catch that?
That's well done. Well, we're not the 2002.
You're damn right. Brian, well done. It's absolutely true. By the time I get out there, the hair will be grown out a little bit. I think it'll be kind of the perfect time to call in my one haircut a year.
AJ from South Philly, same thing, basically following up on lap runners conversation. I agree with the assessment that predictability is best. Maybe to set the standard for championship or world record races, track can borrow something from motorsports, use different flags. Track officials already carry around flags, so why not add the blue flag with orange or yellow stripes to their arsenal? He says it's basically the move over flag if a faster car is coming up from behind. Mostly used for safety, but on the rare record attempt could be used in track. It's worth noting in auto racing, this flag is mostly used on straight, so you don't have to interrupt the strategy involved in turns. This could work in tracks. So you're not forcing a lap runner to an outer lane in a race.
I like the idea.
Less safety issues, though.
Definitely less safety issues, I think. Yeah,
I think we could say, yeah.
I want this to be tried just because I want to see how the officials screw it up or how the athletes screw up interpreting what the officials like. They like, so they move over. So then they're starting to move back, but it turns out there was a second runner that they didn't have a different flag for. So then they collide.
It is weird. The big innovation for track is flags.
I mean, like, I think this is, it's a good idea. Like, I think it's fun, especially in like a championship. I don't think that should be the case. But in like a time trial, or, you know, if you're doing some sort of big diamond league where it's, you know, big money for world records, things like that. Like, I guess, you know, if you're all going in knowing what the deal is, then I think that's totally fine. And I think I'd be intrigued to watch that play out. And I think it would probably work fine most of the time. But I think if it became standard practice, someone would screw it up bad, which would also be fun to watch.
Let's go to Trevor. Lots of DQ talk on the pod recently, especially regarding the problem of stepping inside the track, which we see most often in indoors. Obviously, the frustrating part of a lot of DQs is that even though the athlete may have technically broken the rule, they didn't really gain a material advantage. So how to make sure that everyone, the black and white rules followers versus the spirit of the rule types, is happy? Simple. If you step inside the track, then at some point later in the race, you have to demonstrably run wide so that you're adding distance to your race.
Yes.
That way, we can say that any advantage gained is a wash since you went into lane three for 100 meters or so. First, the two steps you took inside the track. Maybe you have to signal in some way that you're doing this so that we know it's intentional. Will this idea ever be implemented? No. Is there a quantifiable way to measure advantage gained or given back? Also, no. Will those facts stop us as track fans from suggesting outlandish remedies to common problems? Of course not. Discuss. This is Trevor. I just had this mental image, Jace, of Seb Coe sitting in this ridiculously fancy office in Monaco, and he's gathered in front of him a bunch of track fans from all over the world. Trevor is one of them. Another one is, who's our friend? Chris, who's filled out every World Athletics survey ever.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah. Like, they're all sitting around. There's 10 or 15 of them, and they're going around, and Seb's saying, blue sky this thing. No bad ideas. Just throw them out here. Let's just get as much written down. How do we improve track? And then it's just dead silent for 20 seconds. And then Trevor raises his hand and he comes up with this idea.
I love it so much.
And Seb just says, everybody out.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, just in the middle of the race, the official pulls up a flag of some sort, you know, orange flag.
And there's so many flags.
Yeah. He's got a bunch of flags. And then it's just like, hey, on this next turn, you got to run in lane two. It is just the whole turn. And yeah, that evens things out. I'm into it.
What if there's just a GPS tracker on everybody so you can see the total distance?
Mm. that I guess I'd be interested in that in general, just to see like with some of the jockeying and the different passing and stuff, just like how much further do people run? Like general, you know, just like in a standard 1500, what's the normal amount run? Or what's like, oh, this guy, he ran 1513 meters. Well, this guy ran, 1502. That's a big difference.
I guess the problem there would be, as long as you're over 1500 or above, you're fine. But then you could just start cutting and then adding and then cutting and then adding. Then it turns into an obstacle course out there. I don't really know what's going on. All right. Noah in Oregon.
Yeah.
We've been listening to a lot of American and world record songs this year, and I'm not complaining. I love a good record-breaking performance. As you know from my previous emails, I am pro-shoe, not a hater or skeptic. But it's got me thinking about our fixation with times. In other sports like rowing, triathlon, skiing, and cycling, they don't fixate on an athlete's time as much as their relative performance within the era. To say Eddie Merckx is a worse cyclist than some random guy from today who happens to have a faster 40K time trial to his name would be insane. Cyclists know that. I know this is just theoretical, but in a world where all the top 10 times come from the last 2-3 years, would it make sense to have a secondary list, barrier breakers, medalists, and area goats instead of just 10 fastest times? I don't know who gets to compile this list, you guys perhaps, or what the precise criteria are, but going on straight times might not make sense all the time, especially when 50% of the times are from this last year and the remaining 50% come from the East Germans or EPO doping eras. The times list is a weird way to enshrine the history of our sport. What about a list based off of who has the most national titles? World champs, Olympic medals, Diamond League, major wins. Michaela Schifrin is known for the most wins, not for a specific time that she skied, right? Could that work for our sport? Thanks, as usual, Noah in Oregon. Well, with skiing, a lot of these you're just doing different courses. So the time, even if you did care about it, it's meaningless because you're comparing different distances.
So it's more like cross-country, like different cross-country times across.
And I'll ask you this. Do you know any cross-country time?
No, not at all.
Could you name a single cross-country time perform? I couldn't.
Nope.
In the NCAAs? I probably couldn't come within like 10 seconds. Like if you said, what did Caitlin Tui run this last year at cross? I wouldn't have known. I still don't know. So I do like, and I have been thinking about this quite a bit, how good were you relative to your era? And also a good way to look at it, what I started doing is looking at world record progressions to see, okay, man, this person broke a 27-year-old world record. That's way different than breaking a 2-year-old world record and then having your record broken immediately by a person and then another. Like, it just, one of those people is going to get written about when you chronicle the history of the event or track in general, and another person's not. That's just the reality of it. It's the reason why we're going to talk about Roger Bannister a lot more than we're going to talk about, give me somebody who is under 4, barely. I don't know. Whatever. Pick somebody. Do you see it the same way?
Yeah, and I think this is already, how I see it. Like when we're talking about the all-time greats, time is the thing I think about the least. I mean, I go to world championship performances first and foremost. I think that's the most important thing.
Not Olympics, just world championships. I'm done with this.
Championships
crap.
That has the world against each other, like the Olympics and world championships.
Oh, so the Commonwealth Games.
Yeah, exactly. I think gold medals is a much better indicator because, times, whether you want to, with super shoes or not, even if you want to go pre that stuff, I mean, did anyone ever think Moses Mosop was one of the greatest marathoners of all time?
Right.
Like it's one of those things where we just, that's great that he ran that time, but
greatest
like, overall,
track 30K runner of all time. Did it right? Classic that one year. I don't know why they put that poor guy through it. So you're going to run 30K on a track. So we have an event to do on Friday night. No, sorry, go ahead.
No, you're absolutely right. Yeah. I mean, and Dennis Kometo, there were these guys who were just, and in every event, you could find these people, right? Who ran some crazy fast time, somewhere in the top 20 list. And you're just like, wow, that's weird. no one thinks that person's a great, I mean, great when you're putting together all time lists, right? Like no one is really piecing that together. So I think that's always kind of a secondary thing. I think it's interesting to look at. And I think, you know, world records are interesting. But, you know, like I said, we see it all the time, and, you know, even these NCAA ones or whatever, and it's like, okay, collegiate record, cool.
Yeah.
I don't think it means a whole lot. I mean, it's great for the runner in the moment, right? But, yeah, like, overall, I'm like, okay, that doesn't really tell me anything. Like, 15 collegiate records go down every year. And,
yeah, you know, but then whatever. If you have one that holds, if you have one, though, like the triple jump record that got broken this year for the men.
Yeah.
It was really old. I think it was in the 80s.
Yeah, so that's always cool. I always love that.
Well, and in order to have that, you have to keep the records, and the records have to be important. And I think we get into this pattern sometimes of track of saying we care too much about records. What the mainstream public really wants to see is great head-to-head racing. And they do. They do want to see head-to-head racing, but the public also really likes world records.
Yeah.
Because they understand world records.
I like both.
Yeah, yeah. And it's okay. It's okay to like both. It's okay to appreciate both. I do like the eras thing. It reminds me of what Malcolm Gladwell said about the, like, redoing the record book.
Yeah, what was it, like, every decade or 20 years or something?
Oh, decade.
Like that?
Yeah, yeah, I think it was decade. And just that way you can put everything in a better context. And I think he was saying that before even the super shoe stuff happened, right? I don't remember if that was when it was.
Yeah, I can't remember if that was part of it or not. But either way, just, like, yeah, it was like a, hey.
So many times, I forget how many times he's been on the podcast. It's just recurring. Right, man. So I just can't remember.
He calls us weekly, which yeah, exactly. is weird. I mean, he always, we have a long conversation that we don't record just about how the show went that week.
But it's even more important now because of the current technological advances. And then next decade, there might be something else. Right, that causes it. Global warming. I don't know. Oh, I got serious. Sorry. but there'll be something that we're not even thinking of that might change the. Maybe the tracks really will get insanely fast, and it won't just be me and you making fun of people losing their mind about how fast the track is. Something. There'll be something. But yeah, the marathon example you gave is a great one. Who are you gonna remember, Kometo or Meb? Who are you gonna remember? You know, Patrick Macau or Sammy Wanjiru?
Right.
You're gonna remember Abebe Bikila. You're gonna remember Frank Shorter. You're gonna remember these legends, the people who won in their era and dominated in their era. It makes it neat and tidy when the person who dominated in their era also had the world record, but that doesn't always happen. And that's why you need to, you know, do a full accounting of what happened then. And I think track fans, though, usually are smart enough to put together that list. It just, yeah, in the mile right now, and I don't just, in every event, that's the case. But it's most times, if you're in most events, if you're consistently running fast times, really, really fast times, at a certain point, you're going to get medals. And then you're going to have a complete case.
Yeah, it just tells you a much bigger story, right? I mean, it's, you know, it's the same. Like, I mean, no one.
What's more common, though? The one-off random medal person or the one-off random fast time person? It sure feels like it's the one-off random fast time person.
It does. Even though there definitely are the one-off medal person, too, which, hey, that's great. Yeah. You know, yeah. Like, it's and good for those people. That still counts. But, like, the one-off medal person, you know, they have the medal, and that's you know, in the history books, right? Like, as the medalist. But, like, also they're not remembered in that same way, where it's like, hey, this person won, you know, 4 gold medals, and it's like, okay, that you're a little more immortalized there, and that's going to stick out more than anything. I mean, it's
yeah. I'm looking at 2016 just because it's far enough away, and yeah, there's some people here who, you know, that bronze was the highlight of their career. But there's also a lot of random, oh my gosh, that person ran 43.8. Yeah, or that woman ran, you know, 2:18 or 2:19, and then, you know, hear from them again. All right. Thanks, Noah.
Yeah.
Much appreciated.
Let's go with.
We got three left here. Let's go to We're going to go to Robert.
Yeah.
From Michigan, formerly from NorCal. I'm a podcast behind. I just listened to the pod post Euro Champs. Just going to get my 2 cents on the Femke Bowl versus Sydney McLaughlin debate. After watching the 400, I think she should run against Sydney in the flat four. I think she has the better shot in the flat four than the hurdles. It'll be interesting to see if Sydney still has the audacity to talk double after watching that performance. It surely got her attention. As a citizen of the United States, I really want to root for Sydney, but as a track and field fan, I can't help but be partial to Bowl and others that actually show up and compete seemingly on a weekly basis. No, I'm not counting Sydney's 60 hurdles. She should have towed the line right there in the 500 against Bowl. The frustrating thing about Sydney is that you never see her. Same can be said for some athletes like Mo. It's really nice to see Bowl, Mondo, Hodgkinson, Dos Santos, Warholm, who show up to compete over and over again. Sydney is great, but someone who runs so infrequently is hard to pull for. Aaron Judge or LeBron James only played 12 to 15 games per season? They would be an afterthought. As a long-suffering Detroit Lions fan, I kind of get the same feeling about Sydney as I did with Barry Sanders. Incredible talent, but you're never really sure if they actually love the sport or not. I find myself watching her and wondering if she's actually enjoying it. She seems to go through the motions, like she's clocking in and out and at a monotonous job, as opposed to Bowl, who seems to be cherishing every moment. He says, personally, I think Sydney might be in trouble this year. Word, Robert. We've been down this road. We've discussed this before. Nothing new. I don't know how much attention Bowl got at a young age in the Netherlands.
Right.
I'm assuming it was quite a bit because she was good really, really young. But the attention that Sydney got here was greater than most track phenoms. You could probably say most track phenoms combined, because it was very clear that she was going to live up to the hype. And maybe that's part of it. So wouldn't blame her for pulling back a little bit. I have no idea what's going to happen career-wise with her. And I have no idea. I agree. Would love to see her race more because she's so good. Every time she races, it's amazing. But also, if you're her coach and everything she does is amazing all the time, why would you change anything? It doesn't, like, if you're a golfer and every time you go out to the majors, you win, are you going to play any minor tournaments? Maybe every now and then, but they have a formula. I guess what'll be interesting to see is if something doesn't go perfectly this year, do they change it for the next year? She's had she had three different coaches in, you know, from post high school, one in college, and then, one in the beginning part of her pro career, and then now with Bobby Kersey, and she's just been wildly successful all throughout. I don't know what's going to happen, but this event, as we talked about before with Britton Wilson and Femke Bowl on the 400 foreign hurdles, that little tandem I never would have thought this would have been interesting, like as a collective group, Jace. And I'm really excited about it for the outdoor season.
Oh, it definitely adds a ton to it. I mean, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how much Sydney competes, because it's, you know, like, she ran only a few races last year, but obviously she's going to probably want a couple 400s under her belt.
Yeah, presumably, I hope so.
If she's going to, you know, she's going to do the double. I like you said, we've talked about the, you know, kind of the Sydney, you know, does she love this? Or, you know, is she enjoying it? All that stuff. And it's, it's fair. Like, when you're famous, that's like part of the deal, right? But it's at the same time, like, not everyone's gonna be the same, you know, kind of level of
yeah,
entertainer, definitely, and loving it. But at the same time, that's also gonna depend on how much people like to watch you run, right? I mean, it's, even as incredible as she is, it's like, people, you know, Noah Lyles is gonna have more fans than someone who's lot more, you know, shy or thing. And that's like, it's not like you're wrong to be shy or to not be like outwardly emotive, but like, yeah, it's fun to watch people have fun. So I get it, you know? And it's like, Femke Bowl is competing a ton. She's super talented. She seems to love it. Like, it's easy to root for, right? And there's so many runners like that too. And it's, so it is interesting. You know, she's going to be Sydney's going to be great at whichever she does. I really look forward. I hope she does do the double, and I want to see her race against Bowl and others, because I think that's going to just be fascinating.
Yeah, still so young, so we'll like a lot can change. Both I guess
all of them.
And yeah, it's just if she does the double, like seriously does the double, I'll just forget all about any if she doesn't race a lot. Like I'll just that'll be all just whatever. Cuz it'll be amazing. A 400-hurdle double in a major championship.
It would be. I still want to see her run just because it's fun to watch her run. I
mean, oh, so, 100%.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just it is just a bummer because it's just like she's one of the brightest stars in track and field. And it's like, cool. Well, I hope you're going to watch the three meets that she appears in. It's like, okay.
It just, if she did that, though, I'm saying, and I was saying, in just to say in 10, 15 years, you're like recapping her career. There'd be so much stuff to talk about before you even got to. Yeah, she didn't run the Diamond League that much, though.
No,
you'd say, my gosh, they did the four. Whereas when we got to later stage Bolt on this pod, I remember talking an awful lot about him not running at all.
Oh, for sure.
And if she continues to challenge herself at the championship meets, I think that'll just provide something. And I did see some interview that she did where she said she was going to run Diamond Leagues this year. I believe that was her.
Oh, okay. I did see that. So, that's great. I'm all
again,
in.
It's not – this stuff can change year to year. I know people have a pattern, but maybe there's something different that is going to be going on next year. I don't know. Here's the thing, too. I cut some of the athletes – now, some athletes race a lot, which makes it – everybody's going to use them as a point of comparison and say, well, if Carson Warholm's running a lot, then you could run a lot. But – the schedule is never the same for when the world championships are. The schedule of the world championships are never the same, so you don't know what you're preparing for. The Diamond League is all over the place. So I cut them a little bit of – USA's is – and then Olympic Trials, you don't have a bye, but USA's, you could have a bye. Diamond League, you win that, you have a bye. There's a lot of uncertainty with the schedule, and very few things are actually put into a – set calendar like they are in other sports. I cut track athletes a little bit of slack there, but obviously there's athletes who are still competing a lot, and
you can run wherever all the time whenever you want. I mean, there's a meet, there's two
is
meets.
Is that the movie that just won the Oscars?
There's two meets like a week for like 5 months straight. Like if you want to get in a race, you can do it anytime you want, especially if your name's Sydney McLaughlin. Like I'm not going to give her that excuse at all. I'm sorry. I think that's
No. I'm not saying she can't get into a race, but the amount of races we'd want to see her in where she's running against Femke Bol is it's a small number, right? Like, you want to see her – I guess it was kind of cool when she ran that race in Nashville because they had the hurdles on the – was it Nashville or Knoxville? I don't remember. Where they had the hurdles in the wrong spot because she still ran fast and hurdles on the wrong spot. But you want to see her compete against other people, and there's just not that many opportunities for it, and then this person can't go because they have European championships, and that person. All I'm saying is the sport as a whole. I'm not talking about individually. I'm saying the sport as a whole doesn't do itself any favors.
No, I agree with that.
By having a schedule that's not concrete, like if you knew, hey, August 15th is to the 30th is always going to be World Championships, and hey, USA's is going to be here, and Pre is always going to be here. You could start to have higher expectations because you'd say, hey, this is the schedule, guys. Like figure out how to show up at these meets. But there's just a lot of built-in excuses there. Again, I'm not saying that's people shouldn't adapt to it, and obviously people do, but it is just it's the sport gets in its own way there in another aspect.
No, for sure. I mean, the stars not racing each other is not a new thing. That's, you know, we've been complaining about that for a long time. So I'm not putting that part on Sydney. I'm just putting the compete somewhere.
Yeah.
That's even if no one's there, just go out and run more than, you know, one or two meets outside of the meets you have to run in order to qualify for the Olympics or, you know, or world championships like that. I don't think that's unreasonable.
Yeah. But I mean, it's a financial thing too. if you're a professional at something, you're going to want to be compensated for it. So it's not like she can show up to all comers meets, is what I'm saying.
No, but she's a major athlete who would get a huge, appearance fee.
Again. All right. Dan from Chicago, long time, 34th time. First, three quick notes. Marshall's special should obviously be called The Spirit of St. Louis, Lindbergh's famous plane, in case anybody wasn't aware. Two, I tuned into the FlowTrack video podcast the other day and was excited to see what appeared to be Gordon interviewing Eric Sawinski, eventually realizing that Kevin was a Sawinski-like, with the Sawinski-like curls. Assuming the hair is an homage, who is next in line? I would personally like to see Kevin sporting the Ben Blankenship look. No, it's actually an homage to Jason's. It's my fear of getting a bad haircut. Yeah, I'm just scared. I happen to be watching some of the heptathlon long jump for this weekend's NCAAs in Albuquerque. I noticed that several of the competitors started to do the Willie Banks rhythmic clap. Hey, we just talked about that.
Yeah.
Now, I am not exaggerating when I say it appeared there were more people competing than there were in the stands. There is no way anyone could have gotten any benefit from this whatsoever. Is this just a habit of muscle memory? It was amusing and somewhat awkward, but they're not hurting anyone, so I guess I shouldn't judge. Thanks for all you do. That is Dan. I actually think it is muscle memory.
I do. I was just going to say.
Or it's part of the routine.
Yeah, I think it's part of the pre-game routine, the pre-shot routine, whatever it is. Like, I think until they get the pitch clock on there, they're gonna continue to do this. And I like it. Even, you know, because even if it was very limited fans, there was someone in the crowd who was enjoying doing the clap for them. You know, it's a fun, it's a good time. If you're sitting near the takeoff for that, and you can get the thing going, all it takes is a few people to get the tiniest bit of sound going.
Yeah, it fires me up whenever I
like it. It's a little, yeah. it is a little sad when it's that sparse though.
All right, last one, Scooter. In regards to Cam Levins' North American record marathon in Tokyo last weekend, on this week's pod, Kevin proffered that you do not have a North American record song, but you do, in fact, have a tremendously dreadful North American record song. Lasisa Desisa, that is Scooter. Do you remember this? He attached it.
So now that so I haven't listened to this yet, but now that he says this, I'm like, oh man, this does sound like something he did, but I cannot. Like, thinking of it now, I have no idea which song he is homaging, if you will. So I'm excited to hear this again.
We the people, in order to form a less bad NAFTA with Barbados, St. Vincent, and the Grenadines. Also Honduras, Mexico, Jamaica, Canada, Panama, and Belize, Nicaragua, and Haiti, to ordain and establish the best mark ever in the history of North America.
Wait, so did we hear that before?
Now I'm trying to remember.
If I forgot that, I really do have parent brain right now.
Right, and I have no excuse because I do not have a child. Now I'm looking in our North American record song. Yeah, this was back. It was only in 2020, but it was during the pandemic. It was July 2020. Okay. So you know. I don't remember anything from that time.
I apologize, Scooter.
Yeah. But that's for Cam Levins, and it's. I'll make sure it's on my desktop with all the other drops. Maybe it was in there, and I just didn't even look. Now that I,
it's a good one though.
Oh, it's great. I loved it.
Mm. All right, thanks, Scooter.
Yeah, appreciate that.
Thanks to everybody else who wrote in. Appreciate it. Keep the emails coming. We'll need more of them. Next week, we're going to call it there. houseofrun@gmail.com is the email address. Enjoy the rest of your week and your weekend whenever you listen to this, and whatever workout you may or may not be doing or chores around the house. We'll talk to you guys next time.
Jessica Ennis. I'm going to go watch Ted Lasso.